Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, April 11th, 2013. And for the people in the United States, weather, and more severe weather. This is not just here. It's worldwide. We're having quite the experience here with a late winter. It just is not going away, and 10 days into the forecast, which appears to be correct, there's just no let up. So it looks like we're heading well into the month of April. So the 10-day forecast is showing no let up. So that puts us out really to the end of April. And so I'm not sure if this is unprecedented in history, but anyway, amazing amount of energy in a storm. It stretches from Texas to Wisconsin as of last night, anyway. Rolling eastward, severe weather. Not just, this is a line of thunderstorms that stretches, like I say, from northern Mexico to Canada, sweeping eastward across the United States at this point. And then behind that is a winter storm. High winds, snow, a lot of snow that went as far south as Nebraska, certainly unseasonable. So at any rate, all I got to say is, where's the global warming, folks? Absolutely absurd that those people are still pushing for that. And this week, they are trying to improve science in high schools by requiring that they teach global warming as early as fifth grade. Complete fairy tale science. Certainly has nothing to do with reality, and certainly being promoted at that flat earth science to keep our kids stupid. I know lots and lots of people that listen to this show, use my books, use my radio show, and homeschool their kids. A great example came in from one listener this week. We were discussing through email the geometry and trigonometry. The amount of time that they take to teach these subjects is inordinate. They could teach the basic concepts so everybody would understand them, but it's laid out in a fabric that only the best students. I remember when I was in high school and a lot of my friends didn't understand geometry and trigonometry. I was making up my own proofs and they would laugh and joke about it. I'd come into the classroom and the teacher would want to know how I proved these proofs. And then they'd sit down and I'd be teaching the teacher about the geometry proofs. And they would go, they realized I had my own geometry book that I was creating in high school with all of my own proofs but that's not the norm. The average kid doesn't get anything out of these courses unless when they leave the course. So the new math, remember that complete failure. Now they're going to try and do new, more innovative science. The basic bottom line is that there's a huge problem with teaching in all schools. I remember when I was in college, I won't say exactly when, but that's when teacher education classes came into prominence. And here's what happened. The education boards realized that they had a cash cow. They had a cash cow that they could require the state that all people that were going to teach had to take education courses. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and this monster grew. And so what happened? The people that in, say, math, science, especially those subjects, that couldn't make the grade, that couldn't pass the math courses and didn't have hope of getting a math degree, changed into education because they could take a bunch of education courses, get a degree, and those are the people that went off to teach. And the second aspect of this was that now it became law. You had to have a teacher certificate to teach in a high school or grade school or kindergarten or any place to have contact with students. So what happens? The kids that were real good in math and science that went on to get bachelor's degrees, went on to get higher degrees, some of them becoming doctors and PhDs in their subject, those people were prevented from teaching in our high schools because they didn't have the teaching certificate. So getting a bunch of theory of teaching courses became more important than knowing your subject matter. So at any rate, that's when education began to decline. And so during times of economic turndown, when all of these, say, engineers and people with good mathematics backgrounds, when they could have gotten in and taught in our high schools, they were prevented from doing so because of the huge amount of education requirements they would have. And the schools made it difficult for them to go back to school and get those credits. They weren't available. They were only available through the standard coursework in a bachelor's degree at university or state college or whatever. So at any rate, as with anything, another example of bad decision making at the upper levels, which adversely affects things, immigration, where young girls in the United States who are illegal immigrants or illegal aliens, I should say, are having babies because that's their foothold to stay here. Bad decision. You have 15-year-old girls having babies because now they can stay in the United States and use the services for free. What a bad decision. But it's being forced on these people because it's the only game in town. Oh, my goodness. Whoever's running this country, they just got their head, you know, on backwards, upside down, and in the place where the sun don't shine. Okay, and just a quick mention here. I want to thank, once again, every now and then I want to mention the people behind the scenes, the staff at WWCR, and the people who just make this show happen every week, and thank those people for their hard work, their attention to detail, and the people that don't ever get any recognition. So thanks to all those people that make this show, bring it to you with good engineering quality every week. Thanks very much to those people. By the way, this week's science topic, I'll be talking specifically about Comet Lemon, but I have a whole host of science topics. I'll be talking about the rings of Saturn, the makeup of a comet, anatomy of a comet, and other topics. So without further ado, from a listener, an email came to me, and it said that this listener had posted a link or a posting on a place called Godlike Productions. Now, this place has been the biggest misinformation pile of just bad information. Let's put it that way. They have the government trolls that sit there. But this particular exchange was very interesting. And we all know that the Gov and the disinformation crew have been after me for my whole public career, trying to minimize my message, trying to distort it, trying to put up false YouTube videos, anything they can do. You have to realize the amount of effort it takes to do this. This is not just some weasel sitting in a government office with a grudge on his shoulder. This is teams of professional people. When they took down the webpage, when my comets book was released, there were teams of people, the people that I had rebuilding this. They said this was done by teams of professionals and who went in and surgically did specific damage. Okay, so at any rate, what I want to mention is this particular incident on this clearly disinformation page called Godlike Productions, which I never go there, I never post there, but my name does pop up there occasionally. So what happened is they posted a link to a page that has posted basically my Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet online for free. And, of course, this is clearly illegal. It's copyright infringement and, you know, everything that goes along with it. So Godlike Production posts a link to this. And this fan, a listener, posts there and says, hey, you're posting, this is McCanny's book. You know, it's his, you know, it's copyrighted. He sells it on his page. His page is the only place to get this. And you're posting a link to somebody who's got this illegally posted, giving it away for free. So at any rate, they take his posting down immediately. And so then he writes back in, and then now other people join in and go, what are you doing? What are you taking this posting down? After a while, Godlike Productions takes down the link, obviously understanding that they're dealing with a legal issue if they post a link to a page that is illegally posting one of my books for free. And so at any rate, then there's an exchange that goes on, and they keep taking down this guy's postings, which they it turns out they never left the postings up. So I just want to mention that, and this is just one of many, many pages out there that seem to be out, oh, they're just posting information, but it's just, like I say, it's filled with what we call trolls. These are government-paid disinformation people who are there to instantly respond within minutes. And it's so you know these people are professionals, they're paid to do this. So all I'm saying is beware on the Internet. And once again, I don't post on any pages but my own. I don't post on YouTube. I don't post on any other page. So just be aware of that. So when you go out on the Internet and you see my name being used, I have told all of these sites to get my name. There's a thing called fair use that comes under the copyright law, and it's very limited. It's extremely limited. You can take bits and passages for commentary or criticism out of somebody's work, but you can't repost all of their work and say, well, I'm doing this for fair use. That's an absurdity. But the thing is, these pages are government controlled, and so they don't follow any rules, any normal and ethical rules. They don't follow any ethical rules because they know that nobody can touch them because they're controlled. Basically, when I say government, you have to understand that the government, what we talk about a federal government, is not really a government. It's an organization to install and inflict upon the public the bizarre efforts of the New World Order, which is basically the European bankers. And this goes especially for science. That's the one thing that I want people to understand, is that especially science and the scientists are controlled. The tier two science that you see, the garbage science that's pawned off on the public, is very controlled. So you have all these little people running around in their little government jobs doing what they think is important, and they have, well, it's just this whole series of, it takes a lot of stupid people to maintain this system. That's basically what it comes down to. I want to mention also, this week, this Monday, coming Monday, the Supreme Court of the United States is hearing or going to make a decision on a case regarding patent law, regarding DNA and the ability of companies to own and patent DNA, human DNA. Now, let's take a look at what's happened in the plant industry with Monsanto and Cargill and the companies that own patents on corn, soybeans, and other things. They get belligerent in that, now there's the case that's being heard is regarding a couple of the DNA strains that are believed to be cancerous DNA. In other words, women can have tests done to see if they have this cancer gene, and if so, it would imply their increased probability of having breast cancer. But the problem is that the company that developed this using government funding, using public resources, is going to try and patent and enforce a patent on the DNA. Well, you can see where this is going. You're losing the right to your natural makeup. The DNA, the basis of your life, is going to be owned by a corporation for profit. I don't have to tell you where this is going, but you already know. But the point is that I believe the Supreme Court is bought and paid for, and so they will support the patent and the ability of corporations to own patents on the human genome and DNA structure. And of course, this is just going to lead down the same road that the DNA or the genetic makeup of plants, where they will go out and sue a farmer for growing natural plants and try and destroy the ability of people to grow basically nature's own seed strains. Now they're going to do this with the human DNA, owning the human DNA. This is, of course, absurd. This is getting into real bad, let's just put it, satanic corporations with satanic power. That's the only way I can put it. But the Supreme Court, being who they are and being appointed, I believe will go with the... And if they do deny anything, it's just a matter of time until these corporations come through and push through their own agenda. The owner of this company promised that during the development of this DNA, which would be used for cancer research, that they would not privatize it, that they would not use it for... they would not try to develop a patent on it, and then at the last minute changes his mind. And, of course, you see where this is going. The ownership of DNA, the human DNA, that's all you can say, the ownership, the patenting of human DNA, how distorted can that be? I just want to quickly remind you that the book, the new e-book, Comets, is available on my webpage, $16.95 for the e-book, or... if you buy the entire set of five previously available ebooks for $65, you get the new ebook Comets for free. So you get all six books for free. Just a quick note in there, and remember that helps. It helps support this commercial-free show, and a lot of other work that goes on behind the scenes. Just a quick note also, the new ebook is somewhat of a combination of history, modern science, analysis of the, say, the science that NASA is trying to pawn off on the public, and why they're doing it. It's very important to understand that. When you do understand that, you will see why the work that I'm doing is so important and why it's being resisted so heavily in the scientific community and in the world of politics that goes up the chain. It hits at the very core, the absolute very core of the control and power on this planet. Because if people look up, and they're going to look up this year and see these big comets in the sky, including Comet Lemon, which is in the morning sky right now, the people will look up, 6 billion people on this planet, and they're going to see a comet in the sky and that's huge, and they're going to go, this ain't no little snowball. What is this NASA and the European Space Agency? What are these people talking about? But you understand is that the mental equation, it's kind of like a deer in the woods. The deer sees a man coming. It's not four-legged. It's different. He's dressed. He's got this stick that makes loud noises, and when it makes a loud noise, some of the deer fall over dead. Would you trust somebody like that? So they have this instinct that they run from man. They're instinctively afraid of man. So man also is instinctively afraid of comets. And so NASA's job is to make it sound like, oh, this is no problem at all. Carl Sagan says so, even though he's dead. There's no problem, just a little snowball. What could that do to you? You know, and so when the people break with that mold mentally, and then they're going to go, well, what is this? What is this thing? Well, certainly it's big, and certainly if this thing came close enough to Earth, it could do some damage. And so that is the crux of the issue, because they're going to next realize that these yo-yos in Washington or the state capitol or down at City Hall or the World Bank, none of those people have any control over this thing up there. There's nothing they can do about that thing. And so I think it's comical that NASA is saying they have programs now where they can go out and capture an asteroid or capture a comet nucleus and bring it home. They can't even get a mouse in space. How are they going to go up and get an asteroid and bring it home? This is just fairy tale science at its best. But there's people out there that'll read this and think, gee, isn't NASA great? But the bottom line is the average guy on the street, and then if they see electrical effects, they're going to realize that that there is electrical power out there, that I'm right about everything I've been saying, and that we don't need coal, we don't need nuclear, we don't need oil, we don't need natural gas, we don't need any of these to power our society. And then that brings in the question of interest, paying interest on bank loans, the government borrowing money from the international banksters who don't have any money. It's just a line on a paper that they create, this phony number system. And all of a sudden, the power structure of the world comes tumbling down because there's a comet up in the sky. The ability to control the world through energy has been over 100 years now. And actually a lot longer. So at any rate, you understand how imminently important it is to try and crush my work and to keep the vast majority of the people really stupid about science. And so at any rate, teaching the global warming in fifth grade, starting kids out at that level to get the full dose of fairy tale science, you can see how important this is. And so, anyway, enough of that. But the e-book, Comets, available on my webpage, jmccsci.com. Very important work to understand, really a lot more than just comets. A number of weeks ago, it was would have been the March 7th show, I believe. That was a Thursday. Anyway, that's the show that I missed due to all of the hacking and the destruction on my web pages and the other computers. By the way, it did not affect at all the secure web ordering, because that's a totally separate thing. That's not my entity. That's a completely separate entity. But the March 7th show, I did not have equipment to produce the show and put it up on the air. So at any rate, I played live on the air an interview that was done in 1996 by a guy named Chuck Schrammick interviewing me. Chuck was a talk show host from Houston, Texas at the time, and he died shortly after that interview of cancer. And you can tell in the interview he does not have cancer. There's nothing wrong with him at all. Chuck was the guy who took a picture of Hale-Bopp showing that it had a companion, posted it on the Art Bell webpage, and started the whole controversy. They blamed Art and Schrammick, also Courtney Brown, who had gotten his picture of the companion from Ollie Hynow at the University of Hawaii telescope facility on Mauna Kea. But the point is that that interview with Chuck Schrammick, he was a talk show host from Houston. So I want everybody to go back and listen to that, because that's basically what I played that night on the air, live on on WWCR. And so the way you find this interview is go to my webpage, scroll all the way down to the bottom. If there's a link, it's like broadcasts and I forget, something like that at the base of my webpage. Follow that link and then listen to the Chuck Schrammick interview. And it's one of the best interviews probably in my whole career. It was a great interview in 1996, Chuck talking about NASA and the lies and the dirty snowball comet model, what a phony representation that is, and my work. And isn't it amazing that we're now a full 17 years after that, in this ridiculous battle against NASA, NASA's still trying to pawn this off on the public. But as I said, you have to realize that what's at stake here. The whole power structure of the world comes down to the fact that comets are not dirty snowballs. We have a very strange interaction here. So at any rate, that's the show that I played that night when I didn't have any equipment. I pulled up the Chuck Schrammick interview and just basically played it on the air. So that's how you can find it. Once again, go to my homepage, jmccsci.com. Scroll all the way down to the bottom. There's the link of other broadcasts and interviews. Follow that and then scroll down until you hit the Chuck Schrammick interview. Listen to it all. It's about an hour and 15 minutes. But as I said, Chuck was dead shortly after that interview from a rapid onset cancer, and basically they killed him. They killed Chuck Schrammick because he was a great guy. He was an honest guy, and NASA can't stand that. He was a critic of NASA in Houston, Texas, on the air, and they just couldn't stand it. And anyway. By the way, just a quick note, I mention this every now and then, save your old paid bills. If you have a bill that's coming to an end and you paid it off, okay, save those bills, the last bill. Make sure that the company sends you a bill with a balance of zero, and then save that in a file. And you think, oh, that's all this paperwork. Well, no, here's what's going on. A year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years later, these companies, whether it's the power company, it could be a bank, it could be a credit card company, it could be almost anything, they will get a collection agency to start coming after you for bills you have paid. And so then what they're going to do is say you owe this bill. And if you don't have proof, if you don't have a way to go back and say, well, I paid this off, here's my last bill, it says zero, account closed, they will... What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You don't have proof that you paid it. And they're doing this. This is a new method for collection agencies to collect money, get their commission on bills that have already been paid. And they don't care. They're just out to get some money out of you. Just a little warning. Keep your old paid bills. Keep them in a file. Keep them in a box someplace in the back room. And hopefully you won't ever need them. But if you do, it's going to save you a lot of money. And something else I've said, that sooner or later, the computer systems are going to crash, the companies are going to lose their billing records, and they're going to come out after people and say, you owe these bills. Unless you can prove you paid them, you owe it. And the courts will agree with them. For the last 3 years in England, they've had tremendous winters, tremendously bad winters, I should say. And so this, of course, was predicted by the Russian scientists who were studying the Gulf Stream in the Gulf of Mexico, south of the United States, that circulating the sun's energy would come in, heat up the Gulf of Mexico, and there was a natural current that came out south of Florida and out into the Atlantic. The North Atlantic Current would pick up that warm water and bring it up to England. This has been going on for time immemorial. That same current would come up and warm the Scandinavian countries and all the way up to the Baltic into Russia. So at any rate, this tremendous amount of heat stopped with the BP oil spill. That circulation pattern in the Gulf stopped, and the Russian scientists said, wow, this tremendous amount of heat that's brought up to England every year is not going to be there anymore. So indeed, England is in its third straight year of the winter from just terrible winters and extended winters. And one also has to wonder if somehow this is a kickback mechanism, what we're experiencing in the Northern Hemisphere right now in the United States. Russia is receiving tremendous weather. I should say that the weather that we're seeing in the United States is some of the most severe in the world, but there are tremendous storms right now in the South Indian Ocean moving across towards Madagascar. And so the whole world is aflame, the region east of Australia. The whole Southwest Pacific is aflame with major storm systems, which is not unusual, but this is worldwide. It's a worldwide effect, and I'm still trying to find the source of this. It's not real clear at this point. We're not in any major alignments at this time, but it's something that, as I say, we'll have to. I'm going to continue looking at this week. Oh, by the way, when I was talking earlier about Godlike Productions, the way this whole other thread started on that page was related to the YouTube videos of the YouTube videos that were constructed from pieces, bits and pieces of my radio shows going back as far as 2004. So the Godlike Productions promoting those videos, which were clearly false, people up on there posting that is in Jim McCanney, and of course they would not take that down, but they would take down the postings of people criticizing those postings. So at any rate, clearly you can tell what's going on here. There's a concerted, huge effort to try and slam me, slam my work, do anything they can to get the public to turn against me. And that goes for, they work on professionals too. Anybody who's employed by the government, scientists or whatever, basically if they publicly give any support to me, they're going to lose their job. So you can see the level, and this is another thing I wanted to mention. The vast majority of scientists, especially those that get plucked into tier two science or into tier one level science, they basically are compromised. That's the term that's used. They either threaten them, threaten their family. There's 10 other ways to do it. And basically say, if you don't play ball with us, we're going to ruin your career. And then you're going to be flipping burgers at McDonald's. You're going to lose your retirement. So what's a scientist going to do? If you have a PhD in space science and astronomy and physics and astrophysics, and you're working for NASA or in a government position, your likelihood of getting a job someplace else is pretty much zero. You're not going to. You've been there for a while, you're working, your kids are, you want to provide for your kids to go to college, and your career is going to be ruined. You won't be able to get a job anyplace else, and your retirement will be lost. Now, that's a pretty big incentive for a scientist to just keep his mouth shut and play the game, and that's what they're doing. So they're taking the devil's money, and the payback will come someday, but not in this world. But they're all willing to do that. Then you've got the tier two scientists who walk around in their schlocky old clothes that from 30 years ago, and that's about when their last true thought occurred, and go to meetings and fly around the world, and they don't have to do anything. They're tenured, they got their job, and basically thought is not a requirement. So that's what you get for science today. Okay, anyway. I mentioned the storm systems going on. Okay, right now I'm going to go into an article that just came out that the rings of Saturn rain water down onto the planet Saturn. And so it was known a long time ago, back in the Voyager days, that the rings of Saturn were not literally rings. They were spiraling inwards. And that's but prior to those discoveries, I had written my paper, Saturn Sweeper Moons Predicted. That's when I was at Cornell. If you see that paper, which is in the appendices of my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, you will see that my name is J.M. McCanney, and I'm Department of Mathematics, Cornell University. That was after the incident at the physics department. After that, I worked another year and a half in the math department at Cornell before they finally got me thrown out of there for publishing my papers. But it was very clear to me that the rings of Saturn, the proposal in standard science was that, well, the rings of Saturn existed for 4.5 billion years. They formed with the planet back then, and they were a permanent fixture of Saturn. The Voyager spacecraft clearly proved that the rings of Saturn were spiraling inwards. So they were not anywhere near 4.5 billion years ago. They were a temporary structure. So that meant that they had to be forming on the outer edges continually. And so a number of weeks ago, I gave an explanation for the sun having a similar set of rings and that being the cause of comets crossing the ecliptic and having an excitation process when they cross the ecliptic because of that ring system that surrounds the sun, very similar to the Saturn rings. So anyway, today, a published article, I believe it's in Nature, the scientists are finally getting around to talking about this, and the material that's raining into the upper ionosphere of Saturn is highly charged water. So this is just like a comet process. It's the same process as this water is streaming down through the ring system, highly charged, and then neutralizes the electron band that sits above the equator of Saturn. So a very interesting structure, but I just wanted to mention that. They call it the rain of the ring rain, and so it's literally raining water down to the equatorial region of Saturn through the rings. And they actually talked about the highly charged water particles in the ring system. They're actually starting to talk about this. But once again, they have an albatross around their neck of the gravitational no electric fields in outer space, what's called Chapman physics. They're strapped with this, and so there's no rational explanation for this in standard astrophysics. In my paper, which appeared in, 1979 or 80, the Saturn Sweeper Moons Predicted, I explained how all of this works. But here we are in the year 2013, and how many decades later, they're finally starting to publish results, but they don't have any explanation for why this should be. Why is there highly ionized water around Saturn? Where does that come from? It has to have a source there. Where's the water? And then you could also associate this with comet tails. The comet structures, and I've said before, all of the planets are acting like comets. And this is a perfect example in which Tier 2 science has to publish results, but they don't have any reason for this being there. Okay, quickly, the anatomy of a comet. And so let's look, I've talked before about the plasma discharge comet model. A solid rocky object could have ice, doesn't need ice. It can be just a pure, hot, dry rock, comes into the solar capacitor, which it begins about 3 times the distance to Pluto. And by the way, we're going to have some interesting science results coming up with Pluto. There's a probe that's approaching Pluto, and so that should give us our first real nose-to-nose view of Pluto coming up in the future. I'll be talking about that. but the solar capacitor extends probably about two to three times beyond the orbit of Pluto. And so anyway, an object comes in from beyond, begins to discharge that solar capacitor, and the end result is the electron stream coming out from the sunward side is a consolidated electron beam. It charges up the nucleus, this rocky object, to a negative potential, giving it a negative concentration. And then the slower moving ions, positively charged ions, start migrating inwards. As they get in closer and closer to the nucleus, they start to combine and form all the laundry list, the infinity of forms of chemical compositions from water, carbon dioxide, the long chain hydrocarbons, the nitrogen-hydrogen compounds, all of this forming in this chemical soup as it comes into the comet nucleus, and the dust also, the dust that comes in, and that's what we see as the comet tail, that beautifully symmetric comet tail. Okay, so those are the basic structures of a comet nucleus. And so what we see from Earth is that big symmetrical tail. And by the way, that's another simple reason that anybody can understand why the dirty snowball comet model could not possibly be true. They say that the material, the gases, are coming out of cracks and fissures in the nucleus, but they're coming out asymmetrically. They're coming out in all different directions. So there's no reason, there's absolutely no reason why a beautiful symmetrical tail always forms around the nucleus. It should be very asymmetrical and depend on what the nucleus spinning around and spitting material out in various directions. And there's no reason for this to come out in very beautiful symmetrical formations. With the plasma discharge comet model, symmetry is an absolute inherent part of it because the material comes streaming in from all directions following this the symmetrical electrical field lines as it comes into the comet nucleus. Okay, so those are the basic parts of the comet that we see. Another part of the comet that is always seen is called the plasma tail. It's the thin, well, it's called a type 2 tail. It's the thin continuation of that electron beam out far, far beyond the comet nucleus. And so that is pretty much in line with the sun all the time. So that explains the structure of the comet nucleus. Another aspect of a comet that is not really seen, it's visible with specialized equipment, is a hydrogen, an ionized hydrogen cloud that surrounds the comet nucleus. And so this is like a big round ball that of hydrogen. And what is it doing? It's called a space charge sheath. Space charge sheath. A sheath is like a covering. And so it's space charge. It's a charged ionized cloud of gas that basically neutralizes the comet nucleus out to a distance. But remember that the tail material is coming in from the non-sunward side, and that is following field lines. It's a very complex structure, because the round, ballish-shaped space charge sheath of hydrogen is pretty much globular around the comet nucleus, but then it stretches out. And this is a paper that I wrote showing, this is called Debye shielding. Debye shielding amounts to the following. If you have a charge in outer space, then the local ions, the ions in that area will quickly rush to neutralize it. And there's all kinds of calculations and size and dimensions and amounts of charge, etc. And this shielding that takes place happens very quickly. But in the case of a comet that's discharging the solar capacitor, the Debye shielding changes. And so that's one of the complications, and that's what a lot of people who, say, have PhDs in science, they don't understand these basic concepts. And that's what, when I was doing my rudimentary work my fundamental reanalysis of space science based on electric and magnetic fields that result from those electric fields in the movement of current in those electric fields. That's one thing I realized. I had to rewrite the rules of Debye shielding, and so that's in my inherent original papers. And then I extend that in another paper, a couple other small papers, one of them called Dynamics of a Small Comet, in which I talk about the theoretical basis for restructuring what is known as Debye shielding, as D-E-B-Y-E is how that's spelled. It's a French name, after the scientist who discovered that type of electrical shielding. And so applying that to outer space, this is why in Chapman physics they say that there cannot be anything in outer space. There can't be any charged particles because the Debye shielding would quickly cancel it and nothing could happen. Then it basically looks like a neutral object in outer space. That's true, except if you have what I've defined as the solar capacitor, then the discharge that's going on distorts that Debye shielding shape and gives you a totally different, it's part of the comet structure, the anatomy of a comet. The other anatomy of a comet I've talked about in past weeks is the luminosity. The fact that the electron beam shining, passing through the comet out to the sunward side causes ultraviolet light, X-rays, infrared, and those signatures can be seen out in front. Another thing I talk about in my basic work, I call the horns of the bull, and these are historically seen on the big comets. They are plasma effects that come out. They look like a horn's bull. So you have the spike, the squiggly sunward spike, and then out the sides of this comet head come horns. They're plasma horns, and they've been observed many times throughout history. So they're called the horns of the bull in my work. And so anyway, noting that there's people out there trying to copy my work, doing anything they can do to try and capitalize, ride the wave of success of my work, calling things the horns of other, you know, trying to work those titles in. This past week we did an internet search, and there's no less than 10 new books out on the internet that use the titles, literally use the titles from my work. The Nature and Origin of Comets is one of them. That one doesn't even have a title or an author. Many of these do not have authors, or they're from web pages that are clearly government-controlled web pages trying to use my name or distort my work. Anyway, it's almost comical to see the people trying to jump on the bandwagon to make a quick buck, using my work, the terminology that I've developed for my work, doing anything they can do to try and grab on and make a buck. But at any rate, as I said, the horns of the bull are these, and we may see these with this comet coming up this coming year, the C2012S1. By the way, I posted on my webpage, and it's very true, and I'm going to reiterate this. There is no reason, there's no notable reason for NASA to be claiming that this comet C2012S1 that's coming in, it's supposed to go around the sun and then come out and give us a side view of the comet around 37 million miles away. There's no reason for them to be saying this is going to be the comet of the century other than they know I'm right. This is a bigger nucleus, and they're expecting this to be much bigger than any previous comet. They're saying it's a 5-kilometer nucleus. That's the official NASA statement, based on secondary interpretations of data, dust production rate or something. But a 5-kilometer nucleus isn't that big. Halley's Comet had a 7-kilometer nucleus. Hale-Bopp had a 42-kilometer nucleus, according to NASA. Of course, those are all lies, because Hale-Bopp was much bigger. But they're saying that this nucleus of only 5 kilometers will be bigger than not only these comets, but any comet in history. So what is wrong with this picture? Clearly, NASA is lying. And as I've said before, they have the ability, using radio telescopes, to measure directly the size of the comet nucleus. So why all of this second-level guessing, estimating, from a so-called expert on the size of these nuclei? That's so absurd, because the real data they're taking, they're not releasing. So in future weeks, I will be talking more about the anatomy of a comet, but this just gives you a little bit of an idea of what a comet should look like, and then also those parts that we don't see. Oh, the last thing I wanted to mention was luminosity. It's something I've talked about in the last number of weeks. The fact that that electron beam passing through the comet lights it up like a neon light bulb. And so the light that comes off of that is dependent on the composition, the chemicals that are in that comet tail. And so just like neon has a characteristic color, carbon dioxide, arsenic, the other common chemicals that are in a comet tail, the nitrogen, hydrogen compounds, etc. But right now in the early morning sky, you can get up and look at this comet Lemon, which is, as it is called, a bright green. And if you have real good viewing conditions, it's naked eye visible. It's always good to have a set of binoculars, astronomical quality binoculars. And by the way, they're very inexpensive. Everybody should have binoculars. If you go on a trip, if you go on a vacation, you don't want big, clumsy binoculars, and you don't want the little teeny travel kind, the little teeny ones. You want binoculars that are made for astronomical viewing. And so buy a pair that you're comfortable with and get a good tripod. Do a little extra on the tripod. And so basically what you do is you set up your binoculars, and then the binoculars are stable on the tripod, and you can put them, you can stand up, and it's real comfortable watching. And so in the early morning sky right now, in the east, just a bit south of east, you will see Comet Lemon in the early morning sky. Get out there and look at it. And it's a brilliant green comet. And so this is one of your first lessons that NASA and all of the official statements about this comet ignore this whole concept. The concept of luminosity in comets was basically stricken from the record, swept under the rug in 1996 when the X-rays in comets were discovered. And of course, that's something I predicted from my earliest work, that comets would exhibit X-rays to the sunward side. It's caused by the electron beam interacting with the gases in the region out there in front of the comet nucleus. It's very faint, but if you have this electron beam penetrating through those gases, that will be the first braking mechanism that they see, and so it'll produce X-rays. So now it's a known trait of comets to have X-rays to the sunward side. But that's not something you're going to see with your eyes. But the luminosity of comets is something that we're going to see strikingly in this comet Lemon in the early morning sky. So as I said, and remember, do not look at the sun. If the sun comes up, do not look at the sun through your binoculars. Do not look at the sun with your eyes. And if you're, especially if you have kids, be there, adult supervision with binoculars, just so that they don't look through the binoculars at the sun. But get your binoculars, set it up so everybody can take a look. Bright, brilliant green comet Lemon up in the early morning sky now. And this is the beginning. A lot of people saw comet Pan-STARRS. I talked to people that, especially down in the southern U.S., had a real good view of that comet. The northern states really didn't have that great a view of Pan-STARRS. But comet Lemon, very visible for everybody on Earth right now, as I say, in the early morning sky. If you look closely, you'll also see the planet Mercury And I believe that the comet Lemon will be down below the planet Mercury in the sky, or off to the right of it in your point of view if you're looking on the horizon. If you see Mercury rising up on the horizon, wait a little bit, and off to the right of Mercury in the northern hemisphere, you will see comet Lemon rising up or along over the horizon, and take a good look at it. Its tail will be kind of up and to the right. So at any rate, that's the viewing tip for this week. And this is starting, the real good viewing for this comet will be in the next week. So it'd be good to get your equipment out there, take a look at it. My experience is that telescopes are not that good for comet viewing. Comets are typically not that bright to the naked eye through a telescope, even a good telescope. For example, I have an 8-inch, very excellent Cassegrain telescope. I prefer my big binoculars to the telescope. I get a much brighter field of view. I get a much brighter view of the comet through my binoculars. Plus, you get both eyes. It's much more comfortable watching. So binoculars are really the way to go if you're looking at comets. And remember, the thing about astronomical-grade binoculars, as I said, they're not too expensive. Go online, make sure you get from a reputable astronomical source. And they have coated lenses. There's a polymer coating they put on the lens, so it's not just a ground lens. You get a much clearer, brighter, sharper picture. And that's very important for comet viewing because they're faint. They're faint and difficult to see. So at any rate, look at that comet, and when you see that green comet, that's going to be a lesson. This is something NASA is hiding. They wanted to pawn off that that's just reflected light off of that gas. Well, it's so absurd, as I've said before. If you have gas in a test tube, you're not going to see any reflected light off of that gas. If you put electric current through a neon light bulb, okay, now you're going to see that gas light up like a light bulb. That's the electric current working on the gas in the tube. So at any rate, make sure you go out and take a look and get a lesson in electric, the plasma discharge comet model. That's the first lesson, is actually seeing. Seeing is believing. And much of this described in my new ebook, Comets. Make sure you get your copy, jmccsci.com. 7 letters to the webpage, JMCC, S is in Sam, C is in Charlie, I is in indigo.com, JMCCSEI.com, and only available on my website. That's the only possible way to order these. So at any rate, I'm out of time. We'll see you next week with more information. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.